Hey, Bill.
How are you, Allie?
Oh, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Are you sweltering?
I am enjoying the heat.
Oh, okay. Good.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, of course.
I didn't see in the documents a motion around prioritization or funding scenarios.
Yeah, there is a motion coming from steering. It looks like there's been so many emails that have been sent out. Maybe they're just going to be debuting it at this meeting. Maybe they didn't send it out in advance.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if I had missed something.
Yeah, I can tell you right off the bat that there have been no substantial changes to our motions from the last couple of years.
Cool.
So there should be no surprises.
Cool.
Charles, did that work for you? Charles, can you hear us?
News is that there's a westerly wind coming up the west side of Twin Peaks. It's cooling off dramatically within the past half an hour.
Thank God.
I was dying here.
Yeah, I've got a thick sweat mustache right now, and I have a.
Like the past half an hour, it completely shifted, and I see fog out over the ocean.
Thank God. Whew. Wait, Charles, can you hear us now? Still no?
Hi, everyone. We'll give it a couple more minutes so that we can attain quorum. Can I ask who is the caller on iPhone 415-846?
Hi, that's Bill.
Thank you. Okay, almost there. Just need a few more people. Dean, your background is a, is that a video or a GIF? I don't think I've seen many like that, that are in motion. Huh.
I think it's a video. I'm pretending I'm there.
It, I love it.
It's hot enough. It feels like it almost is. Mark, did you get my text that John is out at the last minute? I'll be doing sort of summary sheets for him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got that. Thank you.
Okay.
You want me to share screen on that for you as well, right?
Yes, please.
And Sharon, you're able to share on your end, right?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Do another count here. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, we're just two away from quorum, taking in consideration excused absences. We can do it. Juba, excellent. Okay, we just need one more person. And Nay. All right. Okay, it looks like we have quorum, so we might as well pop in. It's 4:03. I'll call the meeting to order. Start off with, I guess, a welcome to everyone. I'll be facilitating this meeting as I have for past priority setting and resource allocation meetings so that the co-chairs can step back and act as council members and certainly add their voice as council members without being burdened by facilitation of the meeting. So that said, I also want to acknowledge what's pretty obvious to all. This is a very unusual year. This is our first so-called summit that is less than a day long. This is a two-hour meeting. This is also our first summit that is not including a couple key presentations, our areas report and our needs assessment, because of different challenges on both of those, including the challenge of working with people during this health crisis, as well as challenges on HHS's end. I also want to acknowledge, of course, this has been a difficult year for everyone. We are all wrestling with a pandemic, as well as, of course, a national conversation and reckoning on race. And we have lost a number of people. Of course, our own council member, Margo Antonetti, but there have been a number of other people who have passed during this time period. So I just want to acknowledge that this has been a tough time for all of us. The challenges and emotions that people are feeling should not be really undervalued as far as how we're connecting with each other and engaging with our work. So that said, I'll be doing a roll call. Because this is the priority setting and allocation meeting, the roll call will require that you state your conflict of interest. If you have a conflict of interest, I've sent you an email. And that includes people who have the choice of declaring a conflict of interest if they'd like, namely those council members who work for UCSF, but also with DPH via MOU. So if you are when I call upon you, I'll call you by your first name, state your name, and then state if you have no conflict of interest. This is an example. Mark Molnar, I have no conflict of interest. If you'd like, you can also say, Mark Molnar, no conflict of interest, I'm a service provider. You don't need to do that third part if you don't want to. Some like to during the summit. If you have a conflict of interest, you will proceed as such. Mark Molnar, my conflict of interest is psychosocial support and medical case management. I'm a service provider. So hopefully that all makes sense, and I will go into a roll call. And you can please state your conflict of interest upon stating your name. Chuck Adams.
Chuck, no conflicts.
Orin Allen. Alexandria Andrews. Bill Bloom.
No conflict of interest.
Please state your name, Bill.
Yes, hi, Bill Bloom, no conflict of interest.
Jack? Ben?
Hi, my name is Ben Kabangun. My conflicts of interest are centers of excellence, housing, and non-medical case management, and I'm a service provider.
Cesar?
Hi, Cesar Cadavis, I have no conflict of interest.
Ed?
Ed Chitty, no conflict of interest.
Billy Cooper? Cicely?
No conflict.
Oh. Cicely, can you please state your name?
Oh, Cicely Emerson.
Elaine?
Elaine Flores, no conflict of interest.
Matt?
Matt Geltmaker, no conflicts of interest.
David?
David Gonzalez, no conflict of interest.
Kevin?
Kevin Hutchcroft, HHS, no conflict.
Thomas?
Thomas Noble, no conflicts of interest.
Ron?
Ron Hernandez, I have no conflict of interest.
Bruce? Lee?
Lee Jewell, no conflict.
Juba?
Juba Kalamka, no conflict.
Lily?
Lily Krutal, no conflict of interest.
Helen? Antoine? TJ? Jesse?
Jesse Murphy, my conflicts of interest are mental health and centers of excellence.
Nay?
Nay is meant to no conflict of interest.
I'm sorry, Nay, your conflicts of interest are actually psychosocial support and management.
Okay.
Irma?
Irma Parada, no conflict of interest.
Ken?
Ken Pierce, no conflict of interest.
Mike Shriver is on an LOA, unless he has joined us. Charles? Wynn? JP? Michelle?
Michelle Spence, no conflict of interest.
Richard?
I just joined in by phone. I didn't have the passcode. I can't see anything. What's going on?
Just please introduce yourself and state if you have a conflict of interest and you have no conflict of interest.
Yeah, Richard Sullivan, council member, no conflict of interest.
All right. Let's see. Melina, would you mind texting Richard the passcode? It should be on the agenda.
Thank you.
My name is Lydia Arellano. I'm no conflict of interest.
I'm sorry, Eric?
Eric Sutter, my conflicts of interest are medical case management and psychosocial support. I'm a service provider.
Laura?
I can unmute myself. Sorry about that. Laura Thomas, my conflicts are centers of excellence, housing, and non-medical case management. Thank you.
All right. Let me just quickly go through, see if anyone has joined us since I have finished. Oren? Alexandria? Jack? Miss Billy? Paul? Bruce? Helen?
I'm here.
Okay. Bruce, can you speak Bruce your full name no and your conflict of interest?
Bruce Ito, no conflicts of interest.
Thank you. Helen? Antoine?
Here.
Antoine, you should state your full name and that you have no conflict of interest.
Okay. Antoine Matthews, no conflict of interest.
Thank you. TJ? Gwen? And finally, JP. Richard, I'm going to identify you on your phone. You are 415-368. Is that you? I think it is.
Hey there, this is JP.
JP, can you state your full name and your conflict of interest?
Sure, John Paul Soto,
conflict of interest is non-medical case management.
You. All right, let me just identify Richard. Let me see if there's any other, before we go to public, let me see if there's any other, anyone else present who just has a phone number listed. Okay. Can I ask who's calling from 510-944-5925? Can I ask who's calling from 510-944-5925?
Antoine.
Oh, that's Antoine. Thank you. All right, I think everyone's identified. Going back to conflict of interest, if a vote is on a service category specifically that where you hold a conflict of interest, say, for example, if a vote is for psychosocial services, nay would have to say, I recuse. You're pulling yourself from that vote because of a conflict of interest. However, there are no votes during this meeting on specific service categories as of yet. So when we are voting as a slate, your recusal is assumed. So you can vote like anyone else and your recusal on those service categories is assumed. Is there any question about conflict of interest? Okay, going through this, I'm not. All right, if I can now ask members of the public to introduce themselves, I'm going to try to call on folks, so there's a number of people here. Lydia.
I'm part of the Marin Advisory Council.
Thank you.
And my name is Lydia Arellano, and no conflict of interest.
Oh, yes. No, public don't need to state there are any conflicts. They have none. Let's see who else here. Bill?
Bill Hirsch with the AIDS Legal Referral Panel and the HIV/AIDS Provider Network.
Dean?
Dean, excuse me, Dean Goodwin, HIV Health Services. Nice to see everyone.
Sharon?
Hi, I'm Sharon Pipkin. I'm with San Francisco Department of Public Health, HIV Epidemiology Section.
Atef?
Hi, I'm a psychiatrist at the Alliance Health Project.
Beth?
Hi, I'm Beth with HIV Health Services. Beth Neary?
Na?
Hi, Na Lee with Marin County Health and Human Services.
Jody?
Hi, Jody Campbell with Marin Community Clinic and also a member of the Marin Care Council.
Thank you. If there's any members of the public that I've missed, please state your name.
Stephen Spano, HCAP attorney at AORP.
Oh, there you are, Stephen. Hi, Stephen. Sorry about that.
Cool.
And has anyone joined us since I've called roll?
Hi, this is Stuart Knapp. I'm a member of the council, though I still haven't received my letter yet.
Please state your conflicts of interest.
And my conflict of interest is psychosocial support and medical case management.
Thank you. All right. So that was a lot. Let's take a look at the
agenda. Hey, sorry. I think I joined after roll call. And I'm Helen. I'm a member of the council. And my conflict of interest is at COE.
Thank you, Helen.
And I just joined too. This is TJ Lee Miyake. I have no conflicts of interest.
Thank you. The roll sheet for both of you. Thank you both. Okay, let's take a look at the agenda. One moment, I'll share screen. All right, so here's our agenda. We are now in item one and have completed it. The rest is pro forma until we get to six, which is our annual EPI report from Sharon. After that, we have our annual service summary sheet presentation. It will not be provided by John Ainsley. It'll be provided by Dean Goodwin. Dean Goodwin will also walk us through the resource allocation scenarios that are currently on the floor from-
Yeah.
Okay, you're in.
Okay.
Okay, I'm hanging up now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me mute that. And then after that, we actually have our resource allocation scenarios. Then we will be looking at service category prioritization. We'll be looking at the aggregate and people can discuss. And then that will close the meeting. Are there any objections to approving the agenda as written? Please speak them if there are. Hearing none, approved by consensus, I'll now open up the minutes from our last meeting. So the pro forma, 1 through 5. Council staff update, part of that was noted that Darp and Sachdev had resigned. We had our updates from SOA, our general updates across our multiple partnerships and from CHEP and HHS. We had the annual presentation on the HRSA mandate, and then we had a viral suppression update from Dr. Spinelli. Any updates, changes, or corrections to this agenda? And you'll have to speak them since I can't see all of you at once. Any objections to approving the minutes as drafted? Hearing none, approved by consensus. All right, I'll stop share. See what's happening next. Announcements. Are there any announcements?
Mark, hey, Mark.
Did they say July?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that, Ken?
The minutes you just showed us from the last meeting, I believe they said July 27th. Should that be August?
Yes, thank you. That's a correction for sure. We will correct that date. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate it. And Thomas.
I just wanted to note that I saw Charles joined us.
Yes, I've noted him as present. And I've noticed also that Miss Billy Cooper has joined us.
Yep. Okay.
Right. And I can state for them, if they don't mind, that Billy Cooper and Charles Theron have no conflict of interest. All right. Any other announcements? Nope. Let me check chat. Okay, none there. All right. Public comment. All right. So we'll start with Bill. You go.
Hi, folks. I thought I would update you on some of the successes that we had with city budget advocacy this year. In what was a very challenging year, we were able to secure $750,000 in the first year for new housing subsidies for people with HIV, and I think that goes up to $1 million for year two. We were also able to secure funding to expand the beds at Jazzy's Place. And those beds will be targeting female, transgender women of color. And we were also able to backfill all of the proposed cuts to the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. So that was a very successful result given what we were facing. I think it is important to thank and acknowledge the folks who helped to make that happen. And so if you want to send an email to Supervisor Mandelman and to Supervisor Feuer and their staff, that would be much appreciated. I think it's important to thank folks. So good news, and we look forward to making sure that our system of care continues as our clients need it.
Bill, I'd also like to thank Happen. Looks like Laura would also like to thank Happen. Let's all just thank Happen as well. Okay, is there any other public? Oh, look at all that applause. Excellent. Silent applause, still applause. Any other forms of public comment? Is there any public comment? No additional comment?
I love your background.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a public comment. None? Okay, then we're about 5 minutes behind, I think. Let's go right into our EPI report. Sharon, whenever you'd like to share screen, please go on ahead.
Okay.
Oh, one more thing. We'll take questions at the end.
So I am, let's see. All right. Hopefully you're all seeing my screen now. Thank you again, council members, for your time today and inviting me to present the latest data on the HIV epidemiology in San Francisco. The outline of the topics we'll cover today include new diagnosis trends through the year 2019. We'll talk about the HIV care continuum and the indicators. Other key indicators that we're going to look at today include mortality and survival time after stage 3 diagnoses. We'll look at the PrEP care continuum, and we'll also discuss homeless persons living with HIV. Lastly, I'll show some data on how COVID-19 has impacted HIV prevention and treatment services. I'd like to start by showing trends of the number of new diagnoses, deaths, and the number of people living with HIV in San Francisco, starting from the year 2006 and moving towards the right through 2019. The green line represents new diagnoses and shows continued decline over time. In 2019, we had 166 new diagnoses, which is the lowest annual number we've reported in San Francisco. This represents a 19% decrease from the number of 2018 diagnoses, and the previous year-to-year decrease was 13%. The pink line that you see in the middle of the figure shows deaths from all causes among persons with HIV. And deaths remain relatively stable by number, with 257 deaths in 2018. In terms of people living with HIV represented by these yellow bars, there's just under 16,000 people living with HIV. And this is a population that's aging, with 69% of our persons living with HIV 50 years and older. For new diagnoses over the last decade, what we observe by HIV transmission category, or the route that a person acquired HIV, is that among men, the overall number of men declined to 138 diagnoses in 2019. MSM, MSM who inject drugs, and non-MSM persons who inject drugs all declined in 2019. For women, new diagnoses in 2018 had already dropped below 20 for that year, and the number further declined in 2019 to 14 diagnoses. This decline was observed in both women who inject drugs and through heterosexual contact. Looking at trends in new diagnosis numbers by racial ethnic groups, annual diagnosis numbers were fairly stable for whites and APIs between 2018 and 2019. These are the orange lines and the light green lines. But new diagnoses did decrease among Blacks and Latinx persons. This is represented by the blue line and the gray lines. Although the annual number of diagnoses is declining, there are disparities by racial ethnic groups and gender groups. And in this figure, we present diagnosis rates over the last decade for whites, Latinos, Blacks, and Asian Pacific Islanders by gender. Because we know that there's large differences in the population numbers of each racial, ethnic, and gender group in San Francisco, we calculated here diagnosis rates in order to adjust for those population size differences. We used a different color for each racial, ethnic group, and for gender, we used solid for men and dashed lines for women. So what's encouraging for 2019 is that rates for these groups declined in the most recent year, or they were very stably low between 2018 and 2019. And these declines in 2019 come after 2 years of increasing rates in some groups, particularly in Black men. So you see the increase here for 2 years and then the decrease in the most recent year. Black and Latino men are still observed to have the highest diagnosis rates, shown by the solid and the green, solid purple and the green lines, at 79 and 61 diagnoses per 100,000 population. We assessed health coverage for new diagnoses in 2015 to 2019. And having health coverage here is defined as having insurance or being on a program that makes healthcare services available, such as Healthy San Francisco. So in terms of insurance status in the last 5 years, when we look at this group of bars on the right-hand side, which is diagnoses for each year, for every year, about 2/3 or more of new diagnoses had health insurance coverage. And that's shown by this blue portion of the bars. On the left-hand side, we show differences by racial ethnic group. And whites and blacks each had more than 70% of diagnoses insured. By comparison, Latinx and Asian Pacific Islanders had lower proportions insured. And about 1/4 of Latinx and Asian Pacific Islanders were not insured, shown by the yellow parts of these bars. 75% or more of trans women and women in this middle group of bars were insured, and about 2/3 of men diagnosed were insured. So we're gonna pause real quick and just give a summary of what all the new diagnosis slides are saying. There are decreases in 2019 diagnosis numbers in both men and women and risk groups. Men who have sex with men, including men who have sex with men who inject drugs, and non-MSM persons who inject drugs. 2019 diagnosis rates decreased or were stably low for most racial ethnic gender groups. And Black and Latino men had the highest diagnosis rates. In 2015 to 2019, diagnoses with any health coverage ranged from 65% to 74% each year. The San Francisco experiences overall declines in new diagnoses. We're also observing improvements in the health indicators on the HIV care continuum. This is the care continuum with 5 years of data compressed from 2015 to 2019. And each color here corresponds to 1 year of diagnosis. Each group of bars on this horizontal axis represents an indicator that we're measuring, such as linkage to care or viral suppression. So I want to draw attention to several of the recent year's indicators, beginning with the percent of 2019 diagnoses that were linked to care within a month of diagnosis. Okay, so that's shown by this purple bar here. And at 95% linked to care, this demonstrates that the advances of our linkage and care networks throughout the city are really, really improving. And we are so close to having all of our new diagnoses linked to care within 30 days. Our retention in care percentages remain between 64% and 72%. And over on the right-hand side, we see that viral suppression for 2018 diagnoses, which is this light blue bar, within 12 months, it was at 81%. What's new this year is that we're also assessing the proportion of diagnoses who are becoming virally suppressed sooner, in half that time at 6 months. So that's represented by these hatched bars that you see on the right-hand side. And in 2018 diagnoses, 78% were virally suppressed at 6 months. We're also observing this trend towards faster time to care among other care indicators. So in this figure, we look at time to care, treatment, and viral suppression after diagnosis. These are the groups of bars along the horizontal axis. And we're using median days to evaluate the indicators. We use a measurement like median days here because it gives us an idea of how soon the outcome is achieved for 50% of the diagnoses that year. And a measurement like medians is not sensitive to many outlier values. So again, each year of diagnoses is represented by a different color. And what you'll notice here is the decreasing time for all three indicators. For diagnosis to care, the median days decreased from 7 days to 2 days in 2018 diagnoses. For care to ART, it decreased from 7 days to 0 days, meaning that ART was started the same day that the person entered care. And then the median time from diagnosis all the way to viral suppression decreased from 79 days down to a median of 46 days in 2018. In these panels, again, they're showing new diagnoses. We show trends in median days from diagnosis to viral suppression, but for various subgroups. Now, the upper left-hand panel shows some of the same data from the last slide with the overall median days for each diagnosis year. And by racial ethnic group, in the upper right-hand panel, whites, which are the yellow line, and Asian Pacific Islanders with the orange line, had median viral suppression times that decreased consistently every year. All racial ethnic groups displayed in 2018 had median times under 60 days, with whites, blacks, and Latinx persons all having very similar median days to viral suppression. By HIV risk, on the lower left-hand panel, persons who inject drugs, shown by the green line and the orange line, consistently experience longer times to viral suppression. And by homeless status at diagnosis in the lower right-hand panel, the disparity between homeless and non-homeless persons narrowed significantly starting in 2016 and all the way through 2018. Turning to disparities in viral suppression among persons living with HIV, this figure shows people living in San Francisco in 2019. And viral suppression in 2019 was 75% overall, shown by this orange line. But there's several populations that fall below it and were observed to have lower viral suppression. Those groups include women at 71%, Black and Latinx persons at 70 and 72%, people in the age groups 30 to 49 years old were less likely to be virally suppressed. And persons who inject drugs range from 66% to 69% virally suppressed. 70% of persons born outside the US were virally suppressed. And then the group that showed the lowest viral suppression at 39% were persons who were homeless. Next, we'll have a section of slides that discusses mortality in persons with HIV in San Francisco. For context, the annual report presents death information for persons who were residents of San Francisco at the time they were diagnosed with HIV. So we show here age-adjusted mortality rates for whites, blacks, Latinos, and by gender, in order to adjust for age differences between these populations. And what we see is that mortality rates among Black men remain higher than Latino and white men. So Black men is this solid dark blue line. And in 2018, their mortality rate was 201 deaths per 100,000 population. Mortality rates for women were much, much lower than the rates for men. In 2018, Black women had a mortality rate of 59 deaths per 100,000. They are this blue dashed line here. And that rate was 9 times higher than the rate for Latinas and 12 times higher than the rate for white women. This slide shows the top 4 underlying causes of death among persons with HIV for the 3 time periods. And each time period here is represented by a different color. We show here what proportion of decedents in that time period died with the underlying cause. And HIV-related causes of death, which include also HIV stage 3 associated opportunistic illnesses. These are shown in this first group of bars. And what we see is that over the 3 time periods, the proportions continue to decrease from about half of deaths in the first time period to just over 1/3 of deaths in the recent time period. Meanwhile, the proportion of deaths that are associated with age-related causes like cancers and heart disease are increasing from 11% to 16% for non-AIDS cancers and 8% to 11% for heart disease. And these are inclusive of HIV-associated causes, such as anal cancers and cardiovascular disease. Accidents, you'll see, are the 3rd leading cause of death, with a slight increase from 12% in the first 2 time periods to 14% in the recent time period. And the recent rise in accidental overdoses has been driving this increase overall for accidents. This slide shows trends in multiple causes of death among persons with HIV. And it looks a lot like the previous slide, except now we're examining causes of death anytime they were included on the death certificate as an underlying cause of death or a contributory cause of death. So you'll notice that the percent of deaths each cause accounts for is higher compared with the percentages in the last slide when we only evaluated the underlying cause of death on the death certificate. HIV is still the top cause of death and declining from about 2/3 of deaths in the first 2 time periods to 55% of deaths in the most recent time period. Heart disease is now the 2nd highest cause of death, followed by non-AIDS cancers, and then accidents. And the proportions of deaths due to both heart disease and non-AIDS cancers both increased steadily between the time periods, while accidents accounted for 16% of deaths in the most recent time period. We further look at deaths due to HIV by racial ethnic characteristics. And again, here we're looking at multiple causes of death. Each group of bars now represent the percent of deaths due to HIV among that racial or ethnic group. And so across time periods, the percent of deaths due to HIV was declining for whites, blacks, and Latinx persons. Latinx decedents had higher proportions of deaths due to HIV in the first 2 time periods. You can see the orange and blue bars at 80% and 72% compared to blacks and whites. Although by the most recent time period, white, black, and Latinx persons had similar proportions that died due to HIV at 54%, 57%, and 56%. In addition to deaths, another indicator that we track for persons whose HIV disease has gone to stage 3 is survival probability after that diagnosis. So overall, for the years 2012 to 2017 diagnoses, the 3-year survival probability was 89%, represented by this yellow bar that goes across the figure. Groups that had much lower survival than the overall survival were blacks at 82%, and persons who inject drugs, non-MSM, at 79%. Now I'd like to move to the next topic and show progress that our city's making in PrEP access. So this figure aggregates PrEP data from selected community-based organizations in San Francisco from August 2016 to December 2019. And this PrEP cascade focuses on MSM and trans women, looking at the percent who, after they were screened, were scheduled an appointment, initiated PrEP, and stayed on PrEP at 6 months. Each color here represents a different priority subgroup. And the first thing I want to highlight is that white MSM, shown by the light green bars, achieved the highest proportions across all indicators. Trans women, however, shown by this orange bar, had the lowest proportions achieving the indicators. Whites and Latino men had highest percents that initiated PrEP. That's this third group of bars here, and that's at 67% and 63%. Black, Latino, and young MSM all had 37 to 38% stay on PrEP at 6 months, represented by this last group of bars here. Looking at trends in PrEP use among MSM over time and by race ethnicity, now we're looking at data that was collected among San Francisco City Clinic clients. And every year on this figure is a different color. The upward trending bars show that PrEP use among MSM increased over the last 6 years among whites, blacks, Latinos, and Asian Pacific Islanders. Beginning in 2017 to 2019, which are these last three bars, the light blue, the purple, and the pink, Black MSM had lower proportions of PrEP use compared to white, Latino, and Asian Pacific Islander MSM. Next, I'm going to show you several slides with data on people experiencing homelessness and diagnosed with HIV. So within the HIV surveillance case registry, persons are categorized as homeless if one of the following: homelessness is stated on their HIV case report, the residential address provided is a shelter. If the person is living in a vehicle, we categorize them as homeless. And lastly, if the residential address they provide was a medical facility, we also consider them homeless. So this figure shows the number and percent of all diagnoses who were homeless for the last decade. And the number of homeless diagnoses each year, has come down from 2010, and in recent years it's fluctuating. However, this orange line is representing the percent of all diagnoses who were homeless. And so what's concerning is this rise in the proportion of all diagnoses that homeless people make up. In 2018, that was 21% of all diagnoses. And in 2019, it was still rather high at 18% of diagnoses. We wanted to characterize homeless persons among the newly diagnosed. So in the first column, we have the homeless diagnoses, and this right-hand column, the non-homeless. So compared to the non-homeless diagnoses, homeless cases had higher proportions of women, trans women, blacks, and persons who inject drugs. And what you'll see in the homeless column is that 52% of homeless cases were identified to be persons who inject drugs. Our analysis of persons living with HIV who are homeless uses a broader definition for unstable housing. So including both homeless persons and persons who lived in a single room occupancy facility or SRO. Persons living with HIV for whom we had a residential address or housing status in 2019, those are the people included in this table. And the comparison is against persons who are living, but who are not homeless and did not live in an SRO in 2019. So 8% of persons that we had housing status info were homeless or lived in an SRO in 2019. And the persons who were homeless or unstably housed had higher proportions of women, trans women, Blacks, slightly more Latinx persons, and persons who inject drugs. Also, persons who were aged 30 years old to 49 years old. By request of the council, the final slides we include demonstrate COVID-19 impact on HIV prevention and treatment services. And the following data on COVID-19 is not in the 2019 HIV EPI report, and it's very preliminary. So when shelter in place went into effect in March of 2020, clinical and community-based services shut down or moved to a virtual platform. And the Getting to Zero Consortium started off and wanted to evaluate the impact of the pandemic on provision of services in our city. There were dramatic declines in HIV and viral load testing citywide, with the potential to worsen disparities. And we've seen some rebound in recent months in HIV and viral load testing, but there's more work to be done. So to evaluate the changes in population level HIV testing, we use data from 4 laboratories that report both positive and negative HIV test results. So this is just HIV testing in the population. And we present total number of tests by calendar month, which is for, you know, for each row. And then we also compare the number of tests in 2019 to the number of tests in 2020. And calculate the percent change from year to year. So you can see here that, you know, in the early months of 2020, we actually had a slight increase in HIV testing. So it was up by 5% to 7% compared to the previous year. And beginning in March, when shelter in place started, HIV testing volume decreased and was most markedly decreased in April. The year-to-year comparison was down more than 50%. The data shows that by June of 2020, HIV testing volume is resuming, but it does not rebound completely. And this is likely due to the surge in COVID cases that we experienced in the summer months. This slide again shows population-wide viral load testing by calendar month during January to July. And here we've stratified by different age groups. Each age group here is a different colored line. On the right-hand side, we also calculate for you the percent change comparing what the viral load testing was like in January to July. And the age groups over 50, which is this orange line and the green line, those are identified to be higher risk for COVID, and they accounted for the highest viral load testing volume and also had the largest decline in number of tests in April of 2020, with the viral load testing rebounding by June of 2020. Comparing July to January data, the younger age groups under 40, which are the yellow, the purple, the blue, they actually had larger proportional decreases in testing. So there was declining 33% for people under 30 and declining 31% for people 30 to 39 years old. This last slide looks at monthly viral load testing among persons with HIV. So now we're just looking at persons living with HIV in our case registry. And we look at the data overall for 2019, which is represented by this blue line, and for 2020, which is represented by the gray line, for the months of January through August. So the blue line shows the volume of viral load testing during 2019. And the largest dip is here in April. What about by racial ethnic groups? Each racial ethnic group has a different color here. And the group that had the largest number decline in testing were whites. And then blacks declined for whites and blacks, green and purple lines. And these decreases were 37% and 36% when you compared August to January. So I want to thank you again for your attention during this presentation, and remind you that much more data is available in the full report, which is posted at this web address. We also have a limited number of print copies. So if you'd like a print copy, please email me with your mailing address and we'll send you one through the US Postal Service. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon. Very much appreciated. Very extensive presentation, and I also particularly appreciate how responsive you were to different requests from committees for additional information. Thank you so much. We are a little over time, so we'll probably only be able to take about 3 or 4 questions or comments tops. I'm going to actually start this time to see if there's anything from chat before I move to visual. And so if you know how to put your hand up on Zoom, please do so. Let me check chat. Oh, some thank yous from Lee Jewell and from Laura Thomas. Excellent. All right, let's see if there's any questions. Scanning here. You can also just raise your hand if you'd like. Scanning. I see a question has appeared on chat. I'll read that. This is from a member of public, so we'll save that for last if you don't mind. Stephen?
Yes.
All right, any questions or comments from council members? Looks like Bill has his hand up.
Yeah, Sharon, I was wondering if you could comment in terms of PrEP duration. Why such a significant drop with transgender women compared to all the other groups? I also just wanted to make a comment just to remind folks that I also want to make a comment that this data that Sharon is sharing is for everyone living with HIV in San Francisco, so not just folks that are in public safety net.
Yes, thank you for your question about the really glaring disparity in PrEP uptake and PrEP adherence in trans women. We went back and looked at that data, especially why durability is so low. And what we found actually was that we had quite a bit of missing data for trans women. And that was for the sake of the analysis coded as, you know, not achieving PrEP adherence at 6 months. So we just were frankly missing quite a bit of information on trans women. However, other studies, such as the transnational study done in San Francisco, do also show similar low proportions, that large disparity of PrEP adherence for trans women.
Thank you, David.
Yes.
I have a question.
Billy, we'll come to you after David's question.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Ms. Billy. My question about PrEP adherence, do those figures for 2019 take into account the 211 dosing? Because I know that has been a problem in terms of figuring out how to track those. It been sort of like some people don't use daily PrEP, some people like to use event-based PrEP, and sometimes they seem to fall off of sort of like data collection. I was wondering if you can respond to that, or is it something that we need to figure out coming for next year?
Yeah, thanks for that question, David. In terms of the data that the CBOs provided to us for those priority populations. I'm not certain that it tracked to the degree if 211 PrEP was used and the frequency, but that's certainly something that we could go back to look for. But I'm not sure it was tracked to that level of specificity.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. All right, so we have two more questions and then we'll have to unfortunately close questions due to going over on time. We'll start with you, Ms. Billy, your question or comment, and then we'll go to Jack.
Hi, thank you for the fabulous presentation. But I would like to just put my two cents into this. You know, I remember about seven years ago when there was a PrEP a shenanigans thing, some kind of presentation at 25 Van Ness here in San Francisco. And I went, you know, I really didn't want to go, but I went. And as I suspected, when I got there, it was only white males about PrEP. There were no black people and no, especially no trans women. So I just want to say, you know, it saddens my heart here in 2020 that we're never included in the beginning. We're always grandfathered in. And then when you don't get the numbers that people are looking for, it's always that trans women don't want to participate. But in 2020 going into 2021, it's about time people stop giving excuses and include transgender and gender nonconforming and gender non-binary people, especially black trans women and trans women of color. That's why y'all don't get the numbers y'all so readily want. You know, I'm not saying this directly to you, young lady, the presenter, but you know, take this back. And when you have some other facilitation that y'all want numbers, include us in the beginning. We should have been included in the beginning, just like going back to the 80s. My black sisters were dying of HIV and AIDS just the same as all the white boys in the Castro. But we didn't have no help in the 80s up until like the early 90s. I'm just saying, how can you expect to help us if you don't include us? So,
thank you, Ms. Billy. Your comments are appreciated. So we will go with our last question or comment, and that's from Jack Bowman. Also, I'd like to note for the record that Jack Bowman has joined the meeting and has no conflicts of interest.
Hi, thank you so much for your presentation. I was just curious if there was any, I guess I'm just thinking about the missing data for trans women, and I'm just wondering if there's any other correlating data, like did women like stop engaging in care overall, and that's why the data is missing? Is it a data collection issue? Is it is it about how questions are being asked and so people aren't answering, giving the data that is needed? It seems funny because it's the only population that is the case, and it's a little bit unsatisfying to be like, I don't know, we just didn't get that data. And so I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, thanks for that observation. We did go back and look at the rate of missingness for all the subpopulations that you see in that figure. And so, and realized that the rate of missingness was actually quite high across groups, not as high as for trans women, but you know, in some cases in the 40 or 50% range for other subgroups. So I would interpret that to mean that it is a data collection issue. And I'm not entirely sure how clients are followed up for over all of these CBOs, but I do think that data collection or methodology and collecting that indicator data may be part of the issue.
Thank you, Sharon. Unfortunately, we're now 15 minutes over time, so we'll have to restrict any further questions or comments. Thank you again, Sharon, for your presentation. Appreciate it. If you have If you have any questions for Sharon that you'd like me to forward on, please let me know or contact her directly. Thank you again. So now we'll move to Dean with the service summary sheets. Let me pull those up. We'll have to make this a briefer presentation, Dean, if you don't mind. My apologies.
No worries. I don't mind at all. I think I've been muted. Can everybody hear me? Yep. So I just want to start out by thanking John Ainsley, who put a lot of work into this presentation in the last month or more. John is also activated to work at the COVID Command Center, as many DPH employees are. He's activated at 0.8 FTE, so we have him one day a week for HHS-related work. This is something he really enjoys doing and is one of his annual projects. So he was happy to take this on and has spent a lot of time on it. And he's really upset that he's unable to be here at the last minute today. So I will try to do it justice. I did work with John to review this as he was putting it together and to answer questions. But one thing I want to start with is this looks a lot like the service summary sheets you received last year. Last year, John took on a very big project in scope to try to reimagine and revision the look and layout and information here. So he turned it into something that is much more graphic oriented, and the information here is more in numbers and graphs and maps. And there's a whole lot less narrative and text. And I think he did a brilliant job. And I know all the feedback from last year and at the committee this year were also positive. So I'll go through this really quickly. You all have a copy of this to read and review afterwards in more detail. So as you're reading and going through this, if you have any questions, just shoot those to John and I, or shoot them to Mark, who could forward them to John and I, and we'll get that back to you through the Planning Council team. So if we could go, we're here at the table of contents, starts on page five, next page or so. This is sort of like the table of contents here. And then if you could scroll down, Mark, a page or two, here we go. So here's the sort of service categories listed in your current priority order, and then the page numbers where that data can be found. And then also it indicates of whether it's funded with Ryan White Part A funding or not, or if it's only general fund only, or if it's only funded at Marin. You'll see some of those notes there just to sort of help you as you're looking through that detail. And again, while we do note here that if you look down in support services at number 10 for medical transportation, that's only funded by Marin County. So there's no detail or information here. This is utilization data for San Francisco County only, and it includes all the funding sources that go through HIV health services. So it's Part A, Part B, general fund, and a little bit of Part C. If you could scroll down to page six, Mark. So if you could go up just a little bit. So this is the funding summary total for 1920. So in my next presentation, we'll be looking at the budget scenarios, the reduction scenarios based on your motions that have come through the committee. In that, we're looking at current fiscal year 2021. This is tied to the data we're looking at, which is all the data for the last complete fiscal year. So this is for 1920. And just to point out, our total funding for that year was a little over $40 million, about 40.5. And you can see that about half of that comes in on the dark blue on the left, that which is general fund. And the second largest, of course, being the Part A, which is the light blue on the right. Scroll down to the next table, Mark. Sorry, I can't control this from my Mac. So Mark is being Vanna White for me today. Thank you, Mark, I really appreciate it. Core services here, similar table. This is core only. This is just to demonstrate sort of visually the proportion of the funding in core as it's split among those service categories. If you could go down to the next table, Mark. And this is for support services. Again, a similar visual and with the dollar amounts broken out there, and you'll see that the largest piece of that is the rental subsidies there, the $5.2 million or so. If you could go down further, Mark, to where the demographics begin. So John put together these demographics, and I just want to point out a few points, issues. Last year, I think all of you have heard or may have had some presentation on this, that the DPH transitioned from our former electronic medical record, which was known as eClinical Works or ECW, to a newer, better, more evolved product known as Epic. And that transition has happened in stages since the initial rollout began in August of last year. So we have not yet been able to import data from Epic into Aries for those programs that are serving clients that we fund through HHS funding at the DPH clinics and at SF General. We hope to have that data in soon. There were some glitches with Epic that we were working on over the winter. Some of that was with functionality and mapping, and some of it was also with the historic data being imported in, where a lot of the data involving income or household size were missing, and those are the two key elements to eligibility, which determine if the data imports or not. So that put us behind, and then with the COVID pandemic hitting, everything just sort of really slowed down. But that is starting to begin again, and we anticipate having that data in November. And as Mark said, that's part of why we don't have an Aries presentation, and we'll come back with that when we have more data here. But this is representing the data that is in place with that data potentially missing. And as far as the demographic data, if those clients at the DPH clinics or SF General were engaged elsewhere, like at a dental or food or legal services or anything else, their demographic information will be contained here. So it's those clients that are only entering at those spots that are missing. Next page, Mark. So to show that there aren't a lot of changes in this data over time, what John, he did this last year too, but this just kind of shows that even with that potential fluctuation of some clients missing due to the Epic data imports, you'll see here on these trends that it's pretty stable over time. So this is a trend of clients who are housed temporarily or unstable.
The car keys downstairs. It's up there.
And you can see it's pretty constant over time. And if you could go down again, another page, Mark.
One moment, I need to mute someone here. Just a second.
Thank you.
Find that person. Okay, well, can't find them. I'll get them.
So that was housing status, and then there's poverty level. And again, the trends are pretty pretty consistent over time. There's lots of interesting information here broken down by percent of poverty level. If you could keep going, Mark. I'm going to move through this really fast just so there's so much to do. Here's insurance status. And here's viral suppression. And we have a few slides on viral suppression. So these are the clients that are virally suppressed. Yes or no, that's the big pie chair on top that looks like a Pac-Man. And then over time, and then here by gender and by race, ethnicity. And then here are basic demographics on race and gender for all the HHS clients here in this last page. And again, the trending of all this demographic data is very consistent from year to year and over several years. If you could go on down a bit more, Mark. So this is the outline or template of how the service sheet information will represent for each category, and it will appear in priority order with the core first and then the support services. So in this template, you'll see that the category will be named at the top, and then the priority number will be indicated, and then the name of the HRSA core services category name, the definition of that service, and then there'll be program description, and then there'll be a bullet point for each separate unique program we fund there. We don't name the programs for those of you that may be new. Our information is presented in aggregate or anonymously, but each will be described here as far as what they provide, what neighborhood they might be in, what their target population may be, and some information there. And then there's a map that shows it. And then there's an outline that there will be graphs and numbers that will show the utilization as far as the funding allocated and percent of funding expended, as well as the target units of service or UOS and the target UDC or unduplicated clients. So that's the total number of units of service or clients that were to be served within that service category. And then the percent achieved, which will be the number that was actually delivered that year, this last year. And if you could go on down, Mark. So then the demographics. We don't have demographics for every service category, but most of them are there. So then there's another break there indicating that we're going into the core services of the service summary sheets. And then under that, what there will be two pages, and this is basically a table representing the data by service category within core. So the first table is the UOS, and the second is the unduplicated client. You'll see it starts with the mental health services and then the primary medical care, also known as ambulatory outpatient health services, as HRSA defines it, COEs. And you'll see what the contracted or target number of those were, what was provided, and what was achieved. And it'll say percent truncated. And to explain truncation, what we do is for those programs that overachieve, and if they were supposed to serve, you know, 200 clients, but they serve 300 clients, we're only going to put 200 in the service category because we don't want to overshadow if there were programs that were perhaps under-delivering. So this is a performance based on what the targets in the contract are. And that's an issue we look at and potentially adjust through contract negotiation in upcoming years. But what we want to do is not overshadow if some of those programs might be under-delivering, so we truncate at 100% so that you see what the true measure up to 100% is in aggregate for that entire service category, if that makes sense. And if you could, and again, there's two tables. There's one for units of service and one for unduplicated clients. If you could scroll on down, Mark. The first one here is mental health services. The priority order is one. The HRSA core service category, the same name. Usually it's the same, but there will be some variation. I want to point out, especially for new members, the largest of these are for housing. HRSA kind of rolls a lot of things up into housing that we locally at the Planning Council break down into smaller groups. So we look at facility-based health services and residential mental health and rental subsidies and transitional housing and all of these things separately, but we report it all as one line item up to HRSA because they just define housing as housing. So you'll see here program description, bullet of those four programs that we fund, and just sort of the map of the city of where those are located. If you could scroll on down, Mark. And then here's sort of like the graphics table, which shows what the contracted and provided units of service are by number, and then the unduplicated clients to the right. And then the first pie chart here, the gray and the blue, is sort of the mix of funding involved in the service category. And then the budget information here on top is the funding amount allocated, meaning put in a contract and given out to those programs within that service category. And then the gray box underneath that is the amount expended or the dollars spent, and they spent 93%, which is good and within our goal. And dollars unspent, of course, are what we look at every year with the carry forward dollars. And then here's some demographic information here of gender and race and age, as John has broken it out. And that sort of repeats per every service category, again, with core services first in priority order and support services in priority order. We did look at the data, and no one is below the 85% target range, which is in both UOS and UDC. 85% is sort of the threshold of expectation for the target that we have at HIV Health Services. So our accounting colleagues, our budget colleagues in the invoice section, they do an invoice analysis quarterly. So at the third, sixth, ninth, and 12th month of the budget fiscal year, they do an analysis based on what the targets of the units of service in UDC are per each modality of service. And if they're not within 85% of what that target should be for that quarterly benchmark, then they flag that and hold the payment and send that to HHS. And we look at that, and we usually follow up with the agency to see what the issue is and if there's a plan of correction or plan of action needed before payment is in process. Any questions?
All right, let's check chat first. Oh, thank you, Lee. Let's see. I'm not seeing any hands raised. Any questions or comments for this fabulous service summary sheets presentation from Dean and John Ainsley?
John did all the work.
By John Ainsley, as presented by Dean.
As presented by Dean.
No questions, comments, praise? None. None of that. Okay. Ah, there we have.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. I was fishing, if anyone was. That wasn't too obvious. All right. Okay, thank you. There's no further questions. I forgot to take any public comments. So if there's any public comment on this agenda item or on the prior agenda item, now is the time to speak. None? All right. So we'll move into our next item. Dean, you sent me two different ones. Let's see. Would you like the one that is not all...
the narrative.
The narrative. So we'll start with the narrative. So just for folks who might be new to this process, what we'll be doing here is going over the three scenarios. Thank you, Richard. Going over the three scenarios that have been approved by steering that are on the floor. So this will be the presentation of the scenarios first. Dean will go through all of those, and then we'll actually vote on each of them separately. So if that makes sense, let me find what Dean's looking for. Share screen, it'll be just a moment.
No worries, thank you for your help, Mark.
My pleasure. Okay, there it is. And now let me share screen. Okay, take it away, Dean. We're starting with flat funding.
Okay. So for those of you that have seen this, HHS always prepares like a narrative to help guide all of us as we look at the budget information, because the budget information is really a lot. It's really dense, and it can be really overwhelming. I totally get it. There's a lot of numbers, and after a while, your eyes just start to blur. So this is the sort of partner document that you received by email from Melina earlier today, along with what we're going to look at in a bit. Thank you, Melina, for sending that out. So you can, at your leisure, pull that up and review that as you're going through and looking at the budget. As Mark pulls up the budget documents next, I will actually go through this verbally, but you'll have the visual of the budget documents in front of you to look at as I'm sort of describing what we're looking at and pointing out some key elements. And you'll see here, there's a blue box banner to sort of break them up. So it starts with the flat funding scenario, which is basically what our current funding is for fiscal year 20 at this point. And then the first reduction scenario, which is 5%, and then the next, which is 10%. And then the next, which is 15%. And then there's just a reference that the motion did not include anything for an increased funding scenario, which is not very likely. And if there is increased funding, that we would reconvene as a K-12
council and look at what we might want to do with that. Does that make sense? So I'll kind of review all the information on this verbally while we are looking at the budget documents. And then you also have it there if you've printed it out and want to look at it or want to do a split screen. Mark, can you pull up the budget docs for us?
Yes. One moment.
Thank you. Sure. So this is the flat funding scenario, which Mark is making a little bigger for us. That was helpful. Thank you, Mark. Can I get a little bit bigger? Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is flat funding scenario for the current fiscal year. And it demonstrates level funding at this point across all the service categories. So since the motions again this year, as it has in past years, looks at reductions protocol, that's perfect. Thank you, Mark. Going toward those categories, making up the California essential benefits categories, they are highlighted in the column on the left. In green, so mental health services, ambulatory outpatient health services, also known as primary care, the centers of excellence, medical case management, home health care, early intervention services, which for HIV health services means the therapeutic monitoring program, which is the viral load and genotypic testing, for those of you that may be new and not familiar with those terms yet. With that category yet, and then home and community-based health services. So when we get to the reduction scenarios, you'll see that the first two of those only apply to those categories. So again, the core on top, the support services at the bottom, and they're in the priority order. You see the priority order in the second column there. The first three, I want to say yellow, sandstone colored columns.
Banana.
Banana, thank you, Mark. Yeah, banana's perfect. Represent the Ryan White Part A, the Ryan White Part A MAI Minority AIDS Initiative allocations, and then the percent of those. So by category, those are the amounts of Part A funding and Part A MAI funding allocated within those service categories. And one thing I'd like to point out in row 14 column, the third banana column there, that we're at 60.8% for core services in Part A. And that's of interest because there is a HRSA requirement that Ryan White Part A funding be allocated at least 75% within core services. But several years ago, they created a process of applying for a waiver, which San Francisco has gotten for the last many years and will continue to explore and pursue. So going from there is the Ryan White Part B and Part B MAI allocations in the next two columns. And then you'll see that after that are the general fund and general fund getting to zero columns that are gray. And those, or I'm sorry, that are blue. The gray columns are the total for the Part A and the Part B. So as we move forward through the other scenarios, the Part A and the Part B information will kind of just collapse, and you'll see some of this information get collapsed so that we have more rows to show the application of the reduction scenarios. So the gray is the total, Ryan White, Part A and B, by dollar and percent, and then the blue is general fund dollar amount and general fund getting zero allocations, and then the green is the total amount of funding and the total percent of funding for each of those service categories. And you'll see that our total general fund programmatic budget is just a little shy of 36 million, about 35.8 million. So this is, you'll know, you probably remember that John's budget had a higher number, because this is just the, this doesn't include the ETHE grant dollars that we got this last year, because this is the system of care that we, that you all work with and look at for potential reductions and allocations for the new grant just started last year. That's not in here. It doesn't also include one-time additional funding we get from the state for Part B dollars. It also doesn't have the Part C funding. And then some items which are programmatic in nature but are administrative as well, like the Planning Council support and the HIV consumer advocacy and other things like that aren't in here because they're not client services, but they are in that total budget that John presented. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, so can we go to the 5%? Which is a tab on yours, Mark. There's like a, yeah, you have an Excel document with four tabs.
This is a PDF.
Oh, is it? Oh, so it scrolls. Okay. Can you scroll down then?
Yep. Here we are.
Thank you very much. So this is a 5% reduction scenario. So the 5% reduction is that it be applied proportionally only to those service categories that are part of the California Essential Benefits Package. Apologies for the sirens in the background. I have every single window in this apartment open today, of course. So a 5% reduction just within those green highlighted columns. So you'll see here the first two columns with the dollar amount and the percent, that's the total red and white, the Part A and the Part B combined. And then the blue is the general fund. And then the gray or bluish gray is the total HHS funding. And then this yellow column is the modeled reduction of the 5% to the Ryan White Award. So this is 5% of the services dollars from the Part A for the current fiscal year, which would come out to be $564,331. Then you'll see that's applied just within those essential benefits categories highlighted in green. And a 5% cut to Part A, but applied within all service categories within the system of care, Part A, Part B, and general fund, would end up being just a 2.94% reduction, a little under 3%. So 5% becomes 3% when applied. The 5% is increased because it's applied just within some of the service categories, not all of them, but then it's greatly decreased in percentage mathematically because the Part A represents like, 35% of the budget, and the general fund and the others are on top of that. But we haven't had to do a reduction for many years. The last time I think was maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and we did apply a small reduction to these categories, and we applied it in a way so that all programs were impacted regardless of service category. And that would be the plan moving forward as well. Could you scroll down to page 3, Mark? Thank you very much. So this is the 10% reduction, which is the same same scenario, more or less, just a higher percent. So up to 10%, the reduction would still be applied just within the California Essential Benefits service categories. Same categories again. This is a total reduction of $1,128,662 applied just within those categories. That percent would be a reduction of about 5.88% within that. Again, the impact becomes a little less because of all the other funding sources involved. Going on to the next page, Mark, page 4. So page 4 is the 15% reduction. This is a little bit different, and this is a multi-step reduction. This is the fun one. So this is the same applied in the previous page in column, I want to say AG, modeled reduction of 10% in HHS, Ray and White Award. Those are the same dollar amounts from the previous page. But then the next column is a modeled reduction of an additional 5% in the HHS award. And you'll see that's proportionally applied across everyone. And then the next column is those totals. And then the green, of course, is what the you know remaining dollars would be after that hit. So the information there is that the that 10%, again, that's about a 5.88% hit to only the California Essential Benefits service programs. With that additional 5% applied across everyone, that's an additional 1.57%, which would mean that the essential benefits categories get a total hit of about 7.45% from a 15% reduction. And those other categories that aren't part of the essential benefits package, their reduction would be 1.57. And those are the modeled scenarios I wanted to review with you. Apologies if I went a little fast. Does anybody have any questions?
Let me check chat first. Doesn't look like any questions. Let me scroll through. If you could use your hand raise function or just simply wave your hand boldly. Really? Okay. No questions for these summaries. Any public comment on these scenario summaries? Okay. Well, we're moving along. We certainly made up time. From Michelle, great info. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
And from Laura as well. Scenarios are helpful. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get into our resource allocation scenarios. Just as a reminder, these are already on the floor. They will not need to be moved or seconded if they're accepted as is, which of course they don't necessarily have to be. It's up to you. Let's start with, let me pull it up first. We will start with our most idealistic scenario. It will be increased funding. One moment. I think that is it. Okay. Hopefully you all see that. So the motion on the floor from steering reads in a pretty straightforward fashion. If increased funding occurs, the council will reconvene to discuss this scenario. Are there any questions or comments about this particular scenario? Scroll through. Seeing none, any public comment? Seeing none, this does involve money. However, so that we will have to do a roll call vote. Please unmute yourself and say yes or no upon my calling of your name. Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yes.
Jackson Bowman.
Yes.
Bank.
Yes.
Cesar Tagabes.
Yes.
Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Billy Cooper. Billy Cooper. We'll come back. Cicely Emerson.
Yes.
Elaine Flores. Elaine Flores. We'll come back. Matt Geltmaker.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Kevin Hutchcroft and Thomas Noble.
Yes.
Paul Harkin. Oh, sorry, not here. Ron Hernandez.
Yes.
Bruce Ito.
Yes.
Lee Jewell.
Yes.
Juba Kalamka.
Yes.
Lily Crutell.
Yes.
One moment. Helen Lin.
Yes.
Eric Mapp.
Yes. Quick question. I don't know whether or not I'm allowed to vote on this.
Consider it a courtesy vote.
Okay, thank you.
there's delays per usual with the mayor's office. Are we recording this? Antoine Matthews. Antoine Matthews will return. TJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Jesse Murphy.
Yes.
Nay Nascimento.
Yes.
Irma Parada. Irma Parada.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Charles Cerrone.
Yes.
J.P. Soto. J.P. Soto, we'll come back.
Yes, sorry, thank you.
Michelle Spence.
Yes.
Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
Eric Sutter. Eric Sutter.
Yes.
Laura Thomas.
Yes.
All right, quickly going over those who were present but did not respond. Elaine Flores. Billy Cooper?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Billy Cooper? Okay, just a couple more. Antoine Matthews? All right, carries. Thank you very much. Now let's go back to the scenarios. Second, we have our statistically improbable scenario for flat funding, which we receive the exact same amount as we've had in the prior year. So the motion reads as such: if funding remains at the current level, service category resource allocation will remain level across all categories. Any discussion about this item? Quickly scroll through. Right. Okay, if there's no discussion, any public comment? Seeing none, we'll go through this one a little bit faster. I'll note these later. Laura Thomas.
Yes.
Eric Sutter.
Yes.
Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
Michelle Spence.
Yes.
J.P. Soto.
Yes.
Charles Cerrone.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Nay Nascimento.
Yes.
Jesse Murphy.
Yes.
TJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Derek Matt.
Yes.
Helen Lin.
Yes.
Lily Krutel.
Yes.
Zuba Kalamka.
Yes.
Lee Jewell.
Yes.
Bruce Ito.
Yes.
Ron Hernandez.
Yes.
Thomas Noble and Kevin Hutchcroft.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker.
Yes.
Elaine Flores.
Yes.
Cicely Emerson.
Yes.
Billy Cooper. Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Cesar Cadabes.
Yes.
Ben Cabangan.
Yes.
Jackson Bowman.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yes.
And Chuck Adams.
Yes.
All right, now we move on to the most statistically probable, decreased funding. I'll read this out loud. In the event of decreased funding, for the first 10% of reductions, allocation for services that are covered under California's essential health benefits package will be reduced proportionately. If further reduced allocation is required, reductions will occur proportionally across all service categories. If a reduction over 15% occurs, the council will reconvene to discuss this scenario. This scenario will be reconsidered if city general fund reductions to HIV health services occur. So if we take this piece by piece, of course, we've looked at what Dean has provided. And so up to 5%, we see the reductions taken by those particular services under the California's EHB, all the way up to 10% through, I guess, 14.9%. If it occurs over 15%, up to 10%, and then after that, it will be proportional across all service categories, as was illustrated by Dean's final slide. If a reduction occurs over 15%, we'll come back together. This is actually a part of the process. It's called reallocation, which includes the council's ability to change its mind based upon further information. That further information will also include this last line, which will be if city general fund reductions to HIV health services occur. This is our most likely scenario, as it has been for quite a while. I will stop share and see if there's any questions, discussions, or comments on our reduced scenario. Let me check chat first. Seeing no new questions. Okay, let me scroll through to see if there's any questions. Okay, people are fine with this. Huh. All right, any public comment on the reduced funding scenario? All right, then we will go right to a roll call vote again. Starting from the again, Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yes.
Jack Bowman.
Yes.
Ben Kabangan.
Yes.
Cesar Cadabes.
Yes.
Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Billy Cooper. Cicely Emerson.
Yes. Elaine
Flores. Elaine Flores. Matt Gilmaker.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Our government reps Kevin Hushcroft and Thomas Noble as one.
Yes.
Ron Hernandez.
Yes.
Bruce Ito.
Yes.
Lee Jewell.
Yes.
Juba Kalamka.
Yes.
Lily Krutel.
Yes.
Helen Lin.
Yes.
Derek Mapp.
Yes.
Antoine Matthews. TJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Jesse Murphy.
Yes.
Nay Nascimento.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Charles Cerrone.
Yes.
JP Soto. JP Soto.
Yes. Yes.
Michelle Spence. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
Eric Sutter.
Yes.
Laura Thomas.
Yes.
All right. Thank you all very much. This motion, of course, is approved unanimously. And your resource allocation is complete for the year, unless, of course, the council is reconvened to consider reallocation. All right. So, wow. Kind of back on track. I can't believe it. How did that happen? We will now move on to priority setting. Let me find that document. Thank you for those who filled out priority setting of your own via SurveyMonkey. Much appreciated. Thank you, Ali, for putting that together and for me, for us, for us all. And let me find that. And so I'll pull up the aggregate. I'm now in love with SurveyMonkey because it means I don't need to do any kind of math or numbers. Thank you, SurveyMonkey. Okay. My new best friend. So, unfortunately, we of course will not be breaking out into groups to discuss, so we'll have that discussion here if there is such a discussion. So, looking at the core services first, we will see that everything except for two service categories remain the same. The two service categories were the last two within core services, home and community-based health services and early intervention services. Also, as a reminder, even though there are no Ryan White Part A funding for pharmaceuticals, the council in past years has determined that since it is certainly vitally important, they would still like to include it within priority ranking. That's also the logic, I think, for perhaps another service category. So as we see here, mental health, primary medical care, and centers of excellence remain the top three core services. So first of all, is there any thoughts from anyone on retaining these as the top three service categories for the San Francisco, City of San Francisco? Any thoughts or feelings or challenges with that remaining the same? Okay, I'm not seeing anything. Any feelings, thoughts or challenges with the shift in priority for the last two within core services? Scrolling through, I'm seeing no challenges. All right, so let's move on to support services. There has been some shifts here. As you can see, housing is now ranked number 5, housing specifically for residential programs and subsidies. This has moved up in rank by 2, which means that the following have gone down. So for example, psychosocial support was number 5, now is number 6. Residential mental health was number 6, now is number 7, and so forth. Let's see if we can see any other shifts here. It does look like residential substance use / non-medical detox, although it does not receive Ryan White Part A funding, did go up 2 spots. While facility-based healthcare went down, as well as outreach. So, first of all, does anyone have any thoughts or challenges, concerns about the top 3 service categories of emergency housing, transitional housing, and emergency financial assistance remaining the same? Let me scroll through. Does that feel right to everyone? All right, are there any challenges with the changes that have happened in this aggregate for support services? The changes are not huge, but there are changes that occurred. Does anyone have any thoughts, comments, challenges, or concerns with those changes specifically around housing and residential substance use? Oh my gosh, we're gonna finish early. This is incredible. Okay. So we have the entire priority before us. This is your last chance for any discussion, comments, concerns around your priority setting for Ryan White Part A and other service categories that have been included. Let's quickly scroll through. Okay, I will stop share. Any public comment about this service priority order that the council is about to vote on? Okay, people definitely want to make this meeting less than 2 hours. We'll go right to a roll call vote. So if you can please unmute, let's start here at the bottom. Laura Thomas.
Yes.
Eric Sutter. Eric Sutter.
Yes.
Richard Sullivan. Richard Sullivan.
Yes.
Laura, I love that cat. So cute. Michelle Spence.
Yes.
JP Soto.
Yes.
Charles Cerrone.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Nay Nascimento.
Yes.
Jesse Murphy.
Yes.
PJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Antoine Matthews. Derek Mapp.
Yes.
Helen Lin. Ellen Lin. Lily Crutell.
Yes.
Juba Kalamka.
Yes.
Lee Jewell.
Yes.
Bruce Ito.
Yes.
Ron Hernandez.
Was that for Ron Hernandez?
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin Hutchcroft and Thomas Noble.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Matt Geltmaker.
Yes.
Elaine Flores.
Yes.
Flores. Oh, thank you. Cicely Emerson.
Yes.
Billy Cooper. Chitty. Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Ben Cabangan. Oh, sorry. Cesar Cadabes.
Yes.
Ben Cabangan.
Yes.
Jackson Bowman.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yes.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Let me do one last call for Helen Lin.
Yes.
All right. Motion carries again. So this is literally the shortest prioritization and resource allocation summit I've ever experienced in my life. I hope that wasn't problematic to you all and that you felt that the information was useful and valuable in determining your decision making. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Oh, please also fill out the evaluation that you'll be getting from me tomorrow.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all, everyone. Great, appreciate it. Well done.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Yep.